Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Time now for Tuesdays with Neil. Hello, Neil.
I hope, if nothing else, it is a cooler Tuesday where you guys are.
Yes.
Look at the weather now. We hit 100 degrees, which doesn't happen incredibly often. The heat index of 110. Mm. That's a little warm out here.
Yeah.
I'm scared to go outside, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, so why don't you stay in and talk with us?
That's the plan. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that.
I try to help out wherever I can. All right, so Warren has a big game. Fans are calling for him to be the starter. It was brought up to me today, and I said, you know, the irony is that Neil Coulong talked extensively about him all last season about what he's been able to do. How do you view their running back situation right now?
I don't think much has changed, and I'll add this if we want to get deeper into the irony. I think, off the top of my head, probably the most perfectly executed Steelers running play we've seen over the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who contributed to the play, but probably contributed the least, was Jalen Warren. Go back and watch it. It's perfectly blocked. It's outside zone at a master's level. A phenomenal job by Isaac Siamalu, by James Daniels. They blocked it well up front. They blocked it downfield. And on top of that, not to make this a huge thing, but Jordan Poyer took a terrible angle at Warren to a point. I don't think that they expected him to have as much running space as he did. But Poyer immediately became the force, and he blew it badly. I mean, that's, you know, it's preseason football. I'm not going to make a big thing out of it. But to make that the play that now elevates everybody into the favor of Jalen Warren, I think it's just kind of funny because, to be honest, I think Najee Harris would have done the same thing.
Sure.
And maybe that was part of why Najee Harris was, you know, a little short with reporters when he was asked what he thought of Warren. But here's the way I look at it, and this is difficult to do, I know. The fact is, when you have them head-to-head, when you are comparing the two, you need to put them in a vacuum. You can't look at who got drafted where. You just simply have to look at where they are now as players. They're both in the door. Their paychecks are set. Put that aside, I think Harris brings a little bit more than Warren does.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot, in my opinion. Now, this depends on whether you believe a running back is at his best when he gets, you know, 15, 18 carries and doesn't split it at, like, the 13-carry mark.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel that a running back has to have that runway to get better as a game goes on, then you might favor Harris over Warren. And I could see some value in that, some. But there are absolutely situations in which Jalen Warren is the better football player. And because of that, I really think their touches should be a little bit more comparable than they probably are going to be. This is likely to be a fairly heavy run team, which in today's game really kind of means 56-44, somewhere in there, running the ball as opposed to, or I should say passing the ball as opposed to running it. Teams really just aren't going to run the ball more than they'll pass, especially without designed runs coming from a quarterback. But for me, if Najee goes two series, I don't think there's a problem with having Warren play the third series. Now, I think he'll spell him. I think they don't want Harris to have 26 carries in a game along with 6-7 targets. They ideally would like to keep that down, and they want Harris for the tougher yards to kind of grind the clock a little bit, to play possession ball. But Warren's a more explosive player. If anything, I would argue that Warren sees the hole better. He has better vision than Harris does. That's been the area of Harris's game that I've been disappointed with. I thought he saw the field better than he did. I know that we talked about this a bunch last year. That, to me, is the one element that is probably most important overall to an NFL running back. And it's the one area that Harris seems to struggle with the most. I know last year he was hurt. I get it. But as you and I talked about, the injury wasn't to his eyes, and that's what he doesn't see. It's not a great offensive line, but if a running back can't make an offensive line better, I don't know why anybody would even bother drafting one at all. Beef up your offensive line and let whoever go do whatever, because it's so simple and so robotic. There's a skill to running the football, and Najee Harris doesn't seem to have that immediate recognition, that immediate creativity to get from point A to point B. I think Jaylen Warren is a little bit more advanced when it comes to that. But when the rubber meets the road, I really think they should be a more of a duo rather than a primary back and somebody coming in to spell them. I think you can make hay with the two of them in different situations.
Yeah, and for those who talk about drafted versus somebody else, it all depends on production. Why is Tony Pollard still with the Cowboys and Zeke Elliott's with the Patriots? So, just to give you an idea, once you get in there, they got to play the person that's the most productive guy. And that's what they do. So now let's get to this one. Robert Saleh is going to play Aaron Rodgers. His quote was that, look, you know, coach with fear, you know, play with fear. He says, yeah, can something happen? Sure. So how do you view, Neil, preseason games between the idea of bubble wrapping players and not introducing them to actual games until September versus, hey, let's at least get them in for a little bit so they've got something under their belt?
I'm a firm believer that you don't get better at playing football by not playing football.
That's right.
There are limitations on that. I get it. But Aaron Rodgers has never played with the Jets. The Jets have never played with Aaron Rodgers. They've never coached Aaron Rodgers in a game. These aren't things that you're going to be able to solve, you know, before week one in a real sense. But you should probably try to get as close to that as you can. As Mike Tomlin would say, I think there's some value to performing under the stadium lights, getting a simulation in. If he gets hurt, yes, it's certainly unfortunate. If he gets hurt in week one, is it any less fortunate? I don't understand the difference between the two. If he's out, he's out.
Right.
It's a bunch of woulda, coulda, shoulda if he gets hurt in the preseason. And, yes, I understand that that's a problem, but many wise people would tell you football is not a pain-free sport. It's not an injury-free sport. Things are going to happen. But if you look at it top to bottom, snap to snap, it is statistically unlikely that a player is going to suffer a season-ending injury at any point. It happens, but it really is not very likely. So at some point, you have to recognize the fact that, well, he's paid to do this. This is his job, and you need to get him ready to perform when it counts, not sit back and do absolutely nothing until it counts and expect to just run out there and you know, Doc Ellis the situation. You need to be able to have a sense and a feel for who your teammates are, for what you're doing, for what the calls are going to sound like. I know that Aaron Rodgers is far more experienced at this than pretty much anybody else in the league, but that doesn't mean that translates to everybody else who's around him. They need to hear him. They need to know what it's like in the real huddle with the real uniforms on, without Hard Knocks cameras, you know, next to the huddle. They have to have that shared experience together, at least for a drive or two, you know, just to hammer out the last couple things that you need to. Beyond that, yeah, I mean, you don't want to play in the whole game, but you do need some stadium experience before heading into week one, especially. I mean, there is not good precedent, and Tom Brady is not precedent for anything. Let's just accept that up front.
Yeah.
There is not good precedent of a new quarterback leaving one team to go start for another team and having immediate success. Rarely they even look all that good right away. The more of that they can iron out, the better, in my opinion. Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to be told to do a whole lot. He knows what he's doing. I get it, but the rest of the team needs to experience that in the live situation. Garrett Wilson's a phenomenal player. He hasn't played a whole lot of football. He's got another new quarterback now. There are things he has to adjust to. It's not just Rodgers. It's everybody that has to adjust to Rodgers that I would be worried about if I was Robert Saleh. And I think it is the right move to get him out there for a little bit. Doesn't need to be a whole lot. If he gets hurt, I mean, first and foremost, that's terrible for the Jets. It's terrible for Rodgers. Not playing him in the preseason game doesn't it might not solve all the problems that you think that it will, and you should be willing to take a 99.5% chance that he can play 10 snaps in a preseason game and manage to you know, be healthy heading into week one.
Yeah, no question about that. So during the cuts, a player by the name of Aaron Cruickshank was cut, and he was picked up by the Steelers. Now, I've seen Cruickshank, obviously, at Wisconsin. I've seen Cruickshank at Rutgers. As a receiver, but as a return guy, he can be dynamic. Is there room in this league based on limited rosters for a guy that, in a lot of ways, is a specialist?
Room, yes. I don't think that's going to be consistent. I think you can kind of take the mercenary route with a few of these guys, and most of it is going to be using the practice squad rules to your advantage. I think that's probably what the Steelers are doing. Heading into their final preseason game, they probably have a good sense of where their roster is. Due to injury, they have the opportunity to take a look at a couple guys to fill perhaps practice squad needs, which is to say he's on the practice squad. They can elevate him in a game that they don't want to activate an emergency quarterback. And if they need him to return kicks due to injury, you would have somebody available to do that. That would be my guess looking at this. Reading a whole lot into, you know, signings of guys like Aaron Cruickshank at this time of the year is probably not all that valuable of an experience.
But right, sure.
At the same time, when you need a return man and you don't have one, and all of a sudden the only return man you have is James Pierre, as we've seen in the past, that role becomes a lot more important. So it's one of those things that when you have it, it isn't a big deal. It's when you don't have it that it's a problem. And if Aaron Cruickshank from the practice squad can provide that kind of insurance, you're okay with that, especially with an expanded practice squad, expanded rules of who could play and when. It makes sense. It's worth getting him in there and taking a look. You lost a receiver anyway. Maybe he can show you that there's some utility. You know, I kind of thought that the Steelers' six wide receiver spots are pretty well wrapped up, but you've got to build out that practice squad. That is it's become a far more strategic and functional game day asset over the last three seasons than it ever was before. So to weaponize that after training camp, when you don't have the opportunity to really drill these guys and get to know them, you need to start looking at them as early as you can, get a feel for them, and see how you want to develop that that second unit.
So let me ask you this. NFL teams, there's so much emphasis on offense, defense. How much time do they actually put into special teams? And is for some teams, is it just lip service?
Yeah, the really interesting thing that I remember, and a lot of this is kind of the school of Danny Smith, the Steelers special teams coordinator, you are getting a bunch of, typically, the gunners in particular, a bunch of high-flying athletes. And because they are such good athletes, they've never played special teams before. One guy that I remember talking to quite a bit about it, two of them, really, Jordan Dangerfield, who made a 6-year career out of being a special teams guy. He's a backup safety. Ended up being an excellent special teams player. He said he felt his only real shot at playing in the NFL was going to be on special teams. You know, he was a solid player at Pitt, but he wasn't an NFL-level athlete. But he was very smart, and he had no problem with contact. He could block. He could tackle. He put everything he had into playing special teams and ended up being a very good special teams player for the Steelers for a while. The other one was Duran Grant, who was a fourth-round draft pick of the Steelers out of Ohio State. And he told me flat out, with the exception of a few returns here and there, he had literally never played special teams in his life until he got to training camp. And it was a completely different world. He had no idea how much went into it. The trick, though, to answer your question, is, as I laid out, two players with polar opposite perspectives of special teams heading into their rookie seasons and beyond. What they said was they give you a truck ton of information, and you have very little time to really absorb any of it. That's why being good at it is so valuable. And they are perhaps the only real valued guys who are there, and your construct of what you're doing tends to kind of revolve around that. And I'll make this, to add a third person in there. You look at a player like Miles Boykin, somebody that demonstrated he's not an NFL wide receiver years ago, but is still getting reasonably decent contracts for the NFL because he's a great special teams player. He's he's quick, he's big, he's strong, he's fast. Darius Hayward Bay was very similar to that. A guy with a great tease makeup, he's going to extend his career being able to do that. He's going to get, call it the fifth or sixth, probably sixth receiver spot, if you want to look at it like that, on the Steelers roster because he's great at tracking down kick. He's a guy that Danny Smith doesn't need to worry about. He doesn't need to worry about getting this guy to understand what special teams is, what they're trying to do with it, because they don't get a whole lot of practice time because the bulk of those guys are playing both. If you're on deep, T.J. Watt was a special teams player. He was on most team when he was a rookie. And so he's got to worry about being the starting outside linebacker within a complex defense along with figuring out how to chase down kicks, which he's never done in his career. He's never had to do that. So there's a lot of those kinds of players who are there. You need to rely on the core guys to really understand it, to help coach people up, to show people, point out where they need to go. But really on Sunday, be the guy that's kind of everywhere. Because there's not a whole lot of specialty stuff you can do if you don't have the opportunity to coach it. And they just don't have the time to do that because of the emphasis on, offense and defense. So he's got to do a lot with a very little amount of time. And a rotating group of players that might just end up being a numbers game each week, whether they're going to even get a helmet.
Devin Hester. It's amazing. That's how he carved his niche. They had people like saying he should be in the Hall of Fame because he was such a great kick returner. But Devin Hester.
He was absolutely terrifying as a return man. And you saw that guy hit gears of speed that not too many players in NFL history ever hit. Yeah. But look at what was set up for him. Now, when you have a weapon like that, you're probably going to put a little more time and a little more effort into it. I don't have it in front of me, but 2006 Chicago Bears, how much you want to bet they kept a core special teams guy or two above what they normally would have because of the weapon that they had in Hester? You need to be able to set that up. You don't always get that, and the return game obviously is much different than what it used to be. But if you have a guy that can make that kind of an impact on that phase of the game, you're going to kind of foster to it a little bit. I don't think the Steelers – my thought on Mike Tomlin, punt returners are best fair catching the ball wherever they are. He's not really big on he wants experience back there, but he basically wants guys that can catch the ball. That's why Gunnar Olszewski got benched and presumably won't return a kick for the Steelers again. His kickoff returners have often been, backup halfbacks, bigger halfbacks, almost fullbacks, almost H-back types, because they catch the ball and run forward. They don't fumble it. I don't really think he puts a huge amount of emphasis on it.
My friend, always a pleasure. Tuesdays are always better with Neil.
Absolutely. Best part of the day. Thanks for having me, guys.